Good evening and welcome to El Oso Fumar Takes live from Euless, Texas. I'm your host, Barry Duplessis. As always, this is our 66th take, and we are so excited for you to be joining us this evening. It's going to be absolutely fantastic. And I am so, so excited for this particular take. And you guys will meet my guest in just a moment. But I wanted to just thank each and every one of you for 66 takes. This has been an absolutely awesome ride. We've had such an amazing, amazing time sharing different takes with you. And tonight, we're going to take a take that you're probably familiar with, but still kind of dive just a little bit deeper into what it means to our special guest. But before we get to him, we do have to mention our special sponsors. And tonight's show is sponsored by Drew Estate. The Drew Estate story is one of daring, heartbreak, and success, but most of all, one of passion for cigars and the country of Nicaragua, where they have been making cigars since 1998. Jonathan Drew and Marvin Samel are not your average cigar makers. Their story does not begin in Cuba or with fathers in the cigar business. It started with a dream, and through their can-do spirit and never-say-die attitude, made Drew Estate one of the premier cigar manufacturers on the planet. And if you are listening on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are played, our broadcast tonight is sponsored by Cornelius and Anthony. Cornelius and Anthony Premium Cigars is steeped in tobacco tradition. For 150 years, the Bailey family has been part of America's tobacco heritage, passionately caring for the land they cultivate in Keysville, Virginia. Cornelius and Anthony's devotion to the finest grown tobacco and foremost aspects of craftsmanship allows them to introduce the most exquisite cigars to the market. We invite you to enjoy their portfolio of premium hand-rolled cigars and experience their dedication to producing an exceptional product. The exclusive sponsor for everywhere you listen to podcasts for El Oso Fumar Takes is Cornelius and Anthony, and we really thank them for their partnership as well as Drew Estate. And without further ado, it is my absolute pleasure to welcome tonight's guest for our 66th take, Mr. Omar De Frias of Fratello Cigars. Omar, how are you doing tonight?
My brother, I am excited to be here. Every time I get a chance to hang out with you, man, and talk, and, you know, every time I go over and see you guys at Michael Sabaco and some time talking and all that good stuff, it's a happy day for me. So thank you for having me.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure, Omar. It's such a thrill to have you on this show finally. I know I've gotten to interview twice on the other show that I do with William Cooper, Cigar Coop Primetime Special Edition, and that's always a thrill. But it's truly my privilege to have you on tonight, and I'm so grateful for that.
Thank you.
So you just finished up a pretty gnarly road trip. I think you pretty much hit almost all 50 states in the last two weeks, right?
At least we hit, I want to say, including Virginia, because we visited some accounts in Virginia. We went from Virginia to Detroit to Cleveland to Pittsburgh to Youngstown, Ohio, back to Cleveland to Nevada, Las Vegas to Phoenix, Arizona, and then Phoenix, Arizona back. 2 weeks, nonstop.
Unbelievable, man. Unbelievable.
But it's a grind, man. I you know, it's not a whole lot of people are meant for this, you know, to be on the road. And, you know, I know a lot of manufacturers and a lot of, you know, brand owners that don't, you know, they just don't. It's not something that they build their brands in different ways. You know, this is the one way where I'm building my brand. You know what I mean? And so people see us, people see the passion that we have, and they hopefully support us, and they have.
Yeah, you truly built up the brand of Fratello yourself from the ground up, true grassroots. I mean, bare nose, hard knuckles, all the metaphors at it, man. I mean, you really built this up into the presence it has today in today's market. Yeah. I know you're incredibly proud of that achievement. In honor of you tonight, I told you this before we went live, but you know, I cannot have Omar De Frias and smoke a Fratello cigar on El Oso Fumar Takes without having some vino, as you would say.
Beautiful bottle. I love it.
So, as much grief as Trip Wall Drip of Cigar Federation is giving me right now, I am excited to be having some vino tonight with my good friend Omar. A Cabernet Sauv from 2016. Nice. And it is absolutely immaculate.
What's the residual sugar on that? Is it a little higher content residual sugar? Is it, we're talking to what, 13-14% on that cap?
I would say it's probably in that range. The this particular vintage, this particular label is actually a Texas wine, if you can believe it or not. Texas Vineyards down in the Fredericksburg, Texas area, just outside of Austin. It's called Great Creek Vineyards. Real popular. Italian style, that they do, that really, really, really fantastic vintages and stuff. They do have some of the stereotypical Texas red sweet wines that I'm not really a fan of, but they do have some lovely lines, including this Cabernet Sauv. They have another one, a Mosaic, another one called Serendipity. That's a really nice blend. And then, they have a Merlot, the 2016 Merlot that I actually drank last week. That was really nice, considering it's only 3 years old. It was really, really good.
Nice. I had a Merlot. It was a Napa Merlot 2016. I was very disappointed. The bottle was about $50-$60 or something like that. And when I bought it, and I've flown away from, I've diverted my attention from Merlots, especially California Merlot. And that was just a reminder, man. I paid up a dime and a dollar, and I got, so maybe I'll try that one and see what kind of stuff we get. And this was a couple of days ago in Arizona.
The interesting thing about wine, it's just like cigars. We paint this metaphor all the time in the retail part. I'm sure you run into it all the time. Like you can spend, the equivalent is you can buy a bottle of wine for $15-$20,
right?
And you could buy a bottle of wine for $200,
right?
And sometimes that $25 bottle of wine is better than that $200 bottle of wine. Just absolutely. Like with cigars, we can smoke a Fratello Nevada,
right?
For $12-$13, depending on what state you're in,
right?
And then there's other brands, of course, that you can pay $30, $40, $50, $60, $100. And they don't hit the palate as quite well. So it's the same kind of thing sometimes when you consider cigars and wine and how they compare, right, in terms of prices. That price doesn't necessarily dictate, excellent quality.
Absolutely. I agree 100%.
So I am smoking, as you know, I am a Boxer fiend, so I am smoking the Nevada Boxer, which I'm thoroughly enjoying already.
Isn't that blend? So let's have a little discussion before we get into it. And I want to pick your brain on this. I just went around all over Phoenix, Arizona, and I was telling people, you guys have to pay a little more attention to, the peaks and valleys that Nevada blend has, especially on the Boxer size. The reason it's such a smooth tobacco, and I tell them all the time, is the aging and the fermentation of the cigar is literally perfection to that blend. Because it allows I compare it a lot of times with very fine scotch. The higher the aging of the very fine scotch, the smoother the flavor it is in your mouth, right? So I consider the Naveta a very smooth, full flavor cigar, because it does coat your palate with a lot of different notes and a lot of different things. I mean, give me your thoughts on this, and tell me a little bit about that.
The reason I like the Nevada Boxer, and I've told you this to be before, Omar, but for those of you in the audience who don't know, I absolutely, the Boxer Vitola in every single one of your blends, with the exception of the Inverso, which doesn't have a Boxer currently, are absolutely my favorite Vitolas in each blend.
Yeah.
And it's, that extra Ligero that you talk about in the Classico and the other blends as well, kind of lend to that, I think. But I think to answer your question, the reason why I prefer the Boxer in the Nevada specifically is because it really imparts the extra airflow that you get, the little less filler tobacco that's in the cigar that you get, the airflow that comes through. It really lends well to the density of the wrapper leaf. The wrapper on this particular cigar, and for the Bianco as well, but the wrapper on this happens, it's not like the Oro, and it's not even like the Classico. The Navetta wrapper has a lot more dexterity to it. It's a lot more of a fibrous leaf, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And so that extra airflow really, really helps you absorb a lot of that extra flavor in the cigar as you're smoking it. And that richness really brings all the other complexities, all those other notes that you get when you smoke the Navetta. So this the sweetness, the spiciness, the savoriness. I really enjoy this cigar in particular because I think it imparts a really nice fruit, dark fruit. It's not stone or anything like that, but like kind of like your plum, fig, but also delivers a real nice hearty meatiness, not like beef, but just a nice meatiness to it, and just a gorgeous spice, but not an overwhelming pepper. The finish on the nose is not too long. But it's the perfect length. It's not too short. It's not shallow, but it really leaves with a nice, nice flavorful puff every time you take a puff off the cigar, off of the cigar.
I love your explanation. And a lot of people should pay attention on how you literally just described, that first part of the blend itself. Airflow is such a key component in cigars, you know what I mean? And it makes a big difference from one leaf to half a leaf, you know what I mean? And if you allow for a little bit more airflow, but the cigar is still well packed, that makes a gigantic difference. And so that's why my Boxer line across all of my cigars have been so well received. We have one guy. But we have one guy in the factory that does this box press version.
One guy. My goodness.
That's it.
One
guy. And he does an incredible job. You know, it requires more attention. It requires you to press the tabac, the cigar, hands turn and press them again, but soft press, not like you're putting them in a mold and it's over. That's not how it works for us. So that's why, one of the cigars that I've had received the very few problems with the Fratello Boxer is our Boxer line. Very, very unique. I was happy to hear your thoughts.
And every time I smoke it, I think there are certain cigars where this is absolutely true. And there's certain cigars where there's certain cigars that you smoke, I'm sure you can relate, where you enjoy it each and every time. Like nothing really changes about it. You just enjoy it. You enjoy it for what it is. It's a great cigar. You enjoy it. It's something you go back to because it's one of your all-time favorites or whatever. But what I've really found about the Navetta specifically is that every time I go back to it, I notice something different.
Interesting.
And it's that type of a complexity that, and I'm sure one day that'll end. Cause I mean, how many things can you notice about one particular cigar, but you know, as I've visited this over the last, 18 months or so, the thing that I've noticed about it is that, not that it's changing, it doesn't change necessarily, but I noticed something different that I didn't notice before. And I think the last time that I smoked this cigar, it was about midway through where I really picked up a nice nuttiness almost.
Yeah.
Like almost indicative of Cameroon, what you get off of the Oro because of the Cameroon binder,
exactly.
which is really interesting for the blend component that puts together this particular cigar. When you before we get into our take here, but when you came up with the Navetta, and you've, because I know when you first launched Fratello Cigars, correct me if I'm wrong, it was between the two blends you were looking at the time. It was something similar to the Navetta and the Classico, and you ultimately went with the Classico, right?
Right. Right. So what we did was, it was after Classico. So, once we were looking at what we're going to do with Bianco, back then, we were thinking, okay, so we need a limited edition. We wanted to focus on a limited edition on our cigars, do something very unique. And we wanted to do a line that was going to be, constant. And we blended these two cigars with tabaco that Joya Nicaragua owns in a factory. And so what we tried to do was, how can we get a chance to put both of them in the market and have it be very solid, right? But the problem was that, when the FDA started messing around and asking questions about limited edition and all that good stuff, and, we receiving the pressure, my strategy had to change. And so unfortunately, I released this cigar in 2017, And I had already like over a 3-year-old age tobacco in it. You know what I mean? By the time that I released it. So it forced me in 2015, 16, 17, 18, 19 now to continue to buy an enormous amount of tobacco. That's why I utilize the Navete Inverso, because I need to utilize the tobaccos that I bought so much of for, you know, to introduce it into two new lines. And so Navete Inverso is basically Naveta's son, and so it's utilizing a lot of those really, really high quality tobaccos that I use for the Naveta brand.
I still go back to the quote that you said to me at the IPCPR trade show last summer when I asked you, you know, about the Naveta Inverso project specifically, and we'll wrap up with that, because I think that's an interesting point. But I think the Naveta actually really takes us into our take quite nicely, because the Naveta plays homage to your previous career with NASA, because Naveta means rocket in Italian, correct?
Shuttle, yeah.
Shuttle, excuse me. And so it pays homage to your previous career. So what I wanted to do with our viewers and listeners tonight, Omar, if you would, was that I wanted to take the story that you've probably told 1,000 times at this point, but I wanted to take it a little bit deeper of a dive here. Let's go back to when Omar was younger and the dream was NASA. That was the dream. That's where you may or may not wanted to go up, but you came up in the world of science, and that was the career path that you were choosing. Take us back to that time when you were kind of trying to decide what step to take in your career, and NASA ultimately became that decision. I'm really interested to hear what young Omar was thinking at the time.
That's a really good question, Barry. I'll tell you what, you know, sort of made my ears sort of pop up when I heard my brother's a scientist. He graduated from University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, you know, agricultural engineering. Both my brothers are very smart. I consider myself the dumbest out of them all. My youngest brother graduated from Cornell University, PhD program, civil engineering.
Oh my goodness.
Very, very smart guys. And then, you know, there's me. So one of the things that I did was I heard.
Let's just put that in perspective. If Omar De Frias is quote unquote the dumbest person in the family, that's no one wants to play Trivial Pursuit at your house for the holidays. Let's just put it that way.
It's over, I am telling you. There's no way nobody's beating us. That's true. My brother told me I was probably 12 years old, and my brother was my brother's 3 years older, so he's 15. And I remember him talking about we were both in the Dominican Republic, and he would talk about moving to the U.S. Spending, you know, going to school in University of Puerto Rico, trying to get a job with NASA, and go work for the space agency. This struck a chord, because I was like, oh, that's interesting. It would be cool to work for NASA. You know what I mean? 12 years old. Yeah, I'm 12 years old. And, you know, my career took many different paths, and there was definitely multiple goals along the way of me getting into the agency. And one of them was I wanted to make sure that whatever. So it's in my background is a lot of it's all business, right? And so in one of the areas is the technical part. It's like the IT program and project management. I had a lot of experience in that. By going to school, I went to school in Rochester, New York, RIT. Which is a very technical school as well, and they provide a lot of that program management, you know, Lean Six Sigma, a lot of those teachings, you know, and I came up with that to my interview when I heard that NASA was looking for positions to be filled. I was 22 years old. You know, I applied immediately, but I wasn't even a first year in MBA. I was just literally, you know, puddling my way in and seeing what was happening. There were 400 plus applicants trying to get into the agency. And there was only, you know, two or three, you know, back in that first time, two or three positions that were open, and they filled those, right? But I puddled my way in. I started asking questions. I started looking, you know, talking to the right people. Second year they came back, you know, I was ready. I knew who to talk to. I knew who to say hello to. I knew how to approach them. I knew what was my 30-second speech. So I was prepared out of my mind, and I came in with that level of preparation because the exact same situation I presented them the year before, there was only two positions of 500 applicants out of University of Puerto Rico alone. And we're talking, there's other universities in Puerto Rico that NASA was also going to, and they had very, very few job openings. And so I made a very, very clear, very in-your-face approach. It's like, I want a shot. And they started the process of interviewing me for this position. I went through about 8 different interviews, some in D.C., some in Florida. And they asked me what positions, that I felt more comfortable. So I got into a management and program analyst position that had to do a lot with budget execution, program and project management. And so my career started vetting around program management. And so for me, that was huge because then I landed up in a position in NASA where I was doing program management for the biggest IT, infrastructure project the agency had ever encountered. I was managing that, and that was huge for me. It was GS-14 by then. If you look at the entire spectrum of government employees, GS-15 is sort of like the highest level of the agency. Then you have a 14, 13, and 12. So they gave me a promotion for me to handle that. And, that was, I spent about 2 years in that. And then I moved on and I got that. My last job at NASA was the director of the budget for science, and that was a GS-15. And I got there by the time I was 30 years old, and it was great, man. I was very aggressive. I was very passionate. I worked harder than everybody else. And that was just a fact. I mean, and it was proven. I got distinguished performance evaluations in all the things that I did. But it wasn't because, I'm smarter than this guy or smarter than no. It's just I was working harder. I was doing the work that nobody else wanted to do. That was it.
You were doing something smart. You were working smarter, not harder. Yes, and working hard too. And and that ultimately led to your promotion and success within that company. So within that organization. So from 12 years old, it struck a chord. And so now you're 30 years old. You've reached these pinnacles that 12-year-old Omar only dreamed about.
Right.
What was, when you hit that apex in that world, did you ever look back and think like, oh my gosh, how did I get here? How did this happen? Like, how did you reflect on your childhood from that point?
Yeah. It hit me hard, man. It hit me very hard because when I came into the agency, I had one goal. And my goal was to advance through the GS schedule, work very hard to rise up the ranks and get into some really, really high level positions in a technical field, being with a non-technical background. So I was coming in very aggressive to try to achieve that goal. By the time I got to that GS-15 job, I was in a little bit of a quandary because I said to myself, I was like, okay, what do I want to continue to focus on? Do I go ahead and focus on, going back into a program and project management role after I reach a 3-year service with, the position and the job that I was doing? Because I do feel like after I got that promotion, I needed to give myself 3 or 4 years, of working and doing the right things for that organization, which in science, mission director, and I had so many responsibilities, programmatic, decisions on potentially canceling projects, do we continue to fund, do we not, do we meet with the CFO and ask, for extension on projects that could potentially land in the Washington Post. And so there's a lot of pressure that was around in those things. But for me was, what happens after 3 years? So I always had a 5-year plan, always. And I got to my 5-year plan when I got that last promotion. And that's where the quantum, that idea in my brain said, it's like, what do I do now? What's my 5-year plan? I already reached the highest level I could reach at NASA. The next one was just a senior executive service. And then there's just grade within the senior executive service that you can apply. But that never really caught my attention. That's just, that's, you know, a lot of, some of those positions are political. Some of those positions you have to go through an SES CDP program, which is they train you for that. And I got lost, man. And that's when, you know, quite honestly, within those 3 years is when Fratello was born. You know, I, my brothers and I remember I told you how smart some of these guys are. They spent a lot of time, you know, working on their technical fields. And I was working at the time with a lot of technical prioritization with transfer technology transfer from what we did and the work that we did at NASA, where we, for example, developed, you know, a particular type of fabric. And, you know, somebody in the private industry would be able to look at that fabric and say, huh, I might be able to make Velcro. I might be able to do something unique with that. That's what I mean. So I was doing a lot of work with that, and I learned a lot about it. So I asked my brother, I said, hey, what is the stuff that you guys are doing that is super cross-cutting stuff? Why don't you tell me what it is, brief me, and let me see if there is some sort of, you know, access to potentially utilizing this as a technology and putting it into the private industry, right? I mean, you've all heard stories, the Tempur-Pedics of the world, cameras, you know, how do we, you know, internet and all these different things that NASA had, you know, basic patents on, and somebody or entrepreneur looks at it and extracts something very unique about it, right? So,
yeah,
you know, I kept on asking. I don't know if I ever shared this conversation, at least, you know, on a live Facebook, you know, or anything. But I got fed up. I was doing a lot of research myself on things that I loved. And I knew I loved cigars. I knew I loved alcohol. And I knew I loved wine. But it just made a lot of sense to get into the cigar business and looking to it a little bit more. And one day I just said, you know what, the heck with you guys. You guys can't give me the information that I require. I'm going to start my own cigar business. And that was interesting. I was 33. And it was a joy. But thanks to not having a five-year plan, I think it's because it's the reason we're talking right now, man. Very, very interesting stuff.
So for the first time in your life, you don't have – You don't have the 3-year plan, the 5-year plan in front
first
of you.
Time ever.
And that's when the vision of Fratello was born. And now here we are.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's absolutely awesome. I think there's a lesson there. I think that there's a lesson in there that no matter how well you plan out your life, or no matter how driven you are, that you can still hit a crossroads. And even with that crossroads, it's still not a bad thing, because you can ultimately find something that you're meant to do.
Absolutely.
And I wasn't fortunate enough to be there when you were 12, and I wasn't fortunate enough to be a colleague of yours at NASA or to see you even part of that world.
Right.
Just knowing the story is all I really got to go on, Omar. But I think from the little that I know you, and it is a privilege to know you. But the little that I do know is that when I think of Omar DeFrias, when I think of Fratello Cigars, I think of a man who was born for this business.
Right.
And we talked a little bit about this before we got on air, and we were talking about something a little bit different, but I think it still applies. This business in itself is not for the faint of heart. No. And it's not for, but you also can't take it too seriously. And I think you're a perfect combination of that. You have this joy of life, this larger than life presence, this joy of life, these things that you bring, this passion that you bring. People joke about how often you use that word and how often that word gets thrown around in the cigar industry, but it's true.
Yes, yeah,
you're so passionate about it, and yet you are so, so hardworking, and ultimately has led to your success.
Yeah. It's true, man. The 5-year plan for me, 3-year plan, like I would be the only guy at NASA doing like IDPs, individual development plans, out of the entire, you know, out of the entire division. No one had an IDP. I was the only one. My boss would look at me and say, what are you doing? What are you even doing? It's like, hey, it's I'm writing down the, you know, a potential pathway, right? And even on Fratello right now, there, I got you know, social media plans. I got marketing plans every single year with growth and what we're and how we're going to achieve it in the next two or three. I have plan versus actuals. I mean, I treat my business at a very, very high level because I come from a very strong business background, you know, from my MBA, from being at NASA and understanding processes and procedures. And it has helped me tremendously with that, to be very organized. And, you know, what people were saying, how the hell are you even leaving, you know, that great job to just do this and venture out? It's like, this is an adventure. This is exactly what I was planning to do. You know what I mean? And so, you know, it's to a lot of people, it caught him off guard. I grew 47% the year after that. So that, I knew that wasn't going to be a surprise. I grew 30% the year after that. And I'm up 35% just in January alone. So this is all with a path forward. You know, it's about doubling, tripling, you know, my business. I'm just, we've been working very hard on.
So when you, okay, so you said you grew 47% the year after you left NASA. When you, yeah. Since you're such a planner and everything, how did that align with your projections with when you're like, you made this decision? I want to go back to that decision here in just a second, but I'm just interested to know how did that align with your projections? Was that did you exceed them? Was it a little bit of blow, or was that pretty much right on the money?
About a 7%. My I knew it was going to grow 40%. Like there was no in between. Let me see how I do. No. I knew immediately I was going to grow 40%. And there was a very simple reason there. Well, while everybody else was working Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, because I was fully employed at NASA, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I had a day and a half, basically, where I was hustling it up. And you saw it firsthand, man. Absolutely. Saw me in 2016. You saw me 2015 coming around the shop, and it was in the evening, so it was super early in the morning, or I was taking some time off from NASA, visiting you guys real quick, and then going to a Starbucks. That's what a lot of people didn't see. I knew it was going to grow 40%. I didn't know it was going to grow 47. I knew for sure it was going to grow 40%. And the reason of a majority of that was the fact that now I had Monday to travel. Now I had Tuesday to travel. Now I had Wednesday to go and visit people. Now I had Thursday, entire days. Now I had events on Wednesday nights, on Thursday nights, on Friday. So just alone by me. And that's why I made the decision not to bring anybody in-house during that time, is because I need to maximize. I need to know, when do I maximize on the potential of Fratello? But I knew I had maximized it by 2016. There was no more Omar to go around. It was impossible. Impossible. I had 400 some accounts that I was managing back then. There was no way. It was just there was no way. So I going, you know, looking at that, I already knew I was going to grow, you know, at least 40%, because I had 40% more of my time available to me, you know,
right.
and more strategic time. So just based on that, I put out a problem that, and then, you know, we were lucky enough to exceed, obviously, you know, that goal. And 2018 wasn't a different year. It was just that same thing. I did a map. I organized my states on how do I spend my time. It was very, very strategic. So that brings us to 2019.
So obviously there's a lot more time from 12-year-old Omar to 30-year-old Omar when you've reached this pinnacle. You know, it's 18 years to look back on and see all the decisions and see the individual plans that you made as you kind of have built up this yourself in NASA. So now in the short period of time, I want to look back from when you made the decision, not from when Fratello was born, but from when the decision was made, I am leaving NASA, I'm leaving this career, and I am dedicating myself 100% to Fratello Cigars.
Yeah.
That's 3 years almost to the day, 2.5 years
it's
almost to the day?
It's going to be we're going up with about 2 years or about
2 years.
2.5 years, yeah.
Okay, so much shorter window that we're looking at. So looking today, February 17, 2019, a little over 2 years ago when that decision was made. I want to ask you to reflect on it in the same way that you reflected a moment ago on 12-year-old Omar.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that version of Omar to the Omar that I'm talking to right now?
So for me in 2016 was probably the biggest turmoil hurricane season inside my brain in the history of my life. I mean, my entire life I done a lot of things, being very methodical, being very driven by a lot of things. At this time, I knew that I had achieved the goal that I had set out 3 years before, which was to leave NASA. I knew I was there. I knew I was there financially. I knew I was there with my product. I knew everything was to perfection. Okay. So the strategic and the management side of the house, no question. The heart was a different ballgame, because I knew there were so many things that I was going to be missing from NASA, you know, and stimulating conversations, stimulating, you know, discussions, and you know, what we did, nobody else in the world did. And so, you know, going from that to the cigar industry that is just entirely different. It is very old school, very old. You know, we're still doing the processes and the procedures and the stuff, you know, from great, 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 great grandparents, you know, and the fermentation. There is no, the reason I call my brand and my the logo behind Fratello, it's not rocket science. It's because it's not. And so it's true. It's viso seco ligero. It's a tobacco plant that we have, you know, thanks to so many years, perfected the process. You know, there's some people that do certain things, and you know, they go out of their way to do certain aspects and see how this changes, how this does to the tobacco. But you know, there's fermentation. There's the curing process. There's the aging process. There's the blending. I mean, there is a set of things. And so I know, knowing that coming in, the amount of innovation and the things that I was exposed to at NASA was going to be entirely different. So for me, back in 2016 and reflecting to that, I was trying to figure out how can I maintain myself super engaged and super connected to bring that joy that NASA was bringing me into my business and into the cigar industry. And so, you know, a lot of the decisions that we made back then, you still haven't, and you won't see it, not just yet, but you will. And it's some really, really cool stuff, some stuff that, you know, that allows me to play off a little bit of the creativity and the innovation that I saw so many times while I was in the agency.
So it's interesting, because that's always something, and you brought it up perfectly. That's always something that I've always considered when I've thought about you and thought about Fratello Cigars. Is here's a man who came from, you know, cutting edge technology. The, you know, NASA comes up with the stuff first. I mean, the idea of, like you mentioned, the internet and Velcro and things that, you know, are just part of our everyday lives were created by in the interest of NASA. You had access to those kinds of special projects, and innovation is a great word. And it's always been kind of, I've always found it interesting, and I've almost kind of proud, without sounding condescending of you. I don't mean to sound condescending, but I've always been proud of you for not trying to reinvent the wheel so much. But right. In that, you still have managed to bring so much innovation in so little time. I mean, we think about what we were talking about earlier, Boxer. Yes, we've had box press cigars, and we've had box press torpedoes, but right. The idea of that extra Ligero leaf.
Right.
Your labels.
Right.
Your labels are incredibly unique to the industry. They're the only ones that are designed the way they are and placed the way they are. And I know that the people who put them on absolutely hate doing it.
They hate it with passion.
But they're so beautiful. And even from the marketing aspect and everything, it's, you know, everything is there. Everything is an homage without being, you know, my dreaded word in this industry is gimmick. Hate it. But it's not. It's, you know, Navetta Shuttle is not, it's not a gimmick. It's an homage to right. The path that got you here.
Right.
And, the innovation that you've been able to spark in such amount of time is really well restrained. It's still it's still known, and you've made an imprint on the industry that, like, as you said, in many ways hasn't changed over 150, 200 years.
Yeah.
You've still been able to make your mark in such a short time. What does that mean to you specifically? How, as you reflect in your short time in the industry, the imprint that you have made, how do you view that when you think about yourself and your accomplishment?
I reflect on the amount of times that I woke up in Tulsa thinking I was in Oklahoma City. I reflect on the amount of times that I flew into a city because the night before I was booking it, and I wasn't supposed to be landing there. I was supposed to be landing somewhere else. I reflect on leaving NASA around, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock to go to Pulaski, road in the middle of nowhere, Maryland, and getting, 3-4 box order, and then leaving, at 2 o'clock in the morning, 1:30 in the morning, to go back home and wake up the next day. I reflect on the passion that drove me here by my vision of just busting my ass. And that to me, there really isn't any other explanation. I'm very proud of what we've done. I run a very, 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 very lean machine, and we're incredibly proud of it. I mean, that's why we've been bringing people on board and stuff like that, and continue to search for more ways to manage the three most important things when it comes to program and project management. Time, money, resources. And so it's those things that it's always in the back of my brain. How do I continue to push myself to continue to work hard and not lose that kid inside of me that comes with that passion to an event like I did two nights ago at Puro Cigar Bar in Arizona, and not get the hell out of the park like we did. It's about not losing that vision for me, man. So
I will say, if anyone listening or watching has never been to an event where Omar has been present, you're truly missing out on a treat.
True.
You're truly missing out on a treat. There are some amazing individuals in this industry, and one of them happens to be my guest. And I've worked an event with this man. I've worked an event with some amazing people. And I got to tell you, there are few people in the world, not this industry, in the world that control a room the way you do. And it's not by overbearance, and it's not by intimidation, despite your stature. It is your captivating personality and your absolute passion for what you do. Yeah. And your absolute 100% belief in the product that you're selling. And you could be not talking about cigars.
Yeah. It's true, man. It's about engaging with your potential customer. And people see real, They don't buy, you cannot BS yourself to the top. They people see real. And you can be the best salesman in the world. If people don't believe you, you have nothing.
Absolutely. 100%. I do want to, and Omar, again, thank you so much for your time this evening. I do want to wrap up with one final question. So we were talking a lot about IDPs today, your individual development plans, and you always had this 3-year plan, this 5-year plan. So I wanted to ask about 2019 in specific. This is going to be a great year for the cigar industry. I'm positive of it, but specifically to Fratello Cigars, is there anything that you are truly excited about? Not necessarily a new product, because everyone always asks about
it. Yeah.
What specifically are you excited about that may not even pertain to particular products, but me? I don't know.
I'm working,
what are you excited about in 2019?
I'm working on a wheel. I'm working on this wheel right here. So time, money, resources. I told you a little bit about it earlier. I'm working on how I can, reach our customer base, have them, create that following, create that strength with them, knowing that it's me on the road. You know what I mean? I don't have a people of three people right here. I don't have this. It's just me, you know, going out there. It's that wheel. How do I put, you know, more time or less time? How do I increase maybe the amount of money that I go in or not, or the people, and how do I adjust that, right? So I call resources, but it's really just people, right? So people, time, and money. So I'm working very hard on that. It was a very, very good question on your part, because you're very right. I mean, a lot of people ask, you know, what's going on, what's new and all this stuff. And but a lot of people don't ask what's in the grinder behind those decisions. You know what I mean? And so that grinder is what's going to be driving those new products. It's what's going to be driving the fact that I don't intend to release, you know, any particular new SKU or anything like that inside boxes or anything like that. I have other strategies to complement that wheel that's been working on the grinder before. Make sense?
That's fantastic. Oh, absolutely. And it, you know, if by happenstance, if, you know, an Inverso boxer does happen to come out of this wheel, I wouldn't be disappointed personally. Just saying.
I love it.
Just putting it out there, maybe an idea, you know, you might want to pick it up.
Potential.
So really, really fantastic stuff tonight with Omar. Omar, thank you so much for your time. I know you were absolutely exhausted from your road trip, and it means so much to me that you would agree to sit down with me after a long road trip and go a little bit, hopefully a little bit deeper into your amazing story, because it truly is an incredible story. One documented by the Washington Post. And if you haven't caught that article, you need to. It's absolutely sensational for mainstream media to focus on an industry individual. It was one of the moments for our industry in the last 5 years, hands down. And it was great that you were the subject of that article and by such a well-respected and established medium like the Washington Post. Just absolutely sensational. So take a look at that article. If you guys have got the chance, Google it. It's great. Really, really great in-depth piece on our guest tonight. And really appreciate all of you guys listening and watching, especially if you are listening on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, or wherever podcasts you play. You are listening in part by our special partnership with Cornelius and Anthony Cigars. They are the exclusive sponsor of our audio broadcast for 2019, and we really appreciate their partnership. And I really appreciate, again, Omar of Fratello Cigars, Omar De Frias, truly one of the greatest guys in the industry. I love hanging out with this guy.
Thank you.
I love working an event with him, and I love talking with him, and it's absolutely fantastic. So tune in next week. We're actually going to have another sensational take. We're going to have Robert Caldwell Cigars, for Take 67. It'll be a fantastic event. You don't want to miss that. And stay tuned to our Facebook page for a calendar of upcoming events. And as always, subscribe on YouTube. Download, subscribe. Leave a review, all that good stuff. We really appreciate that. And we really appreciate you for listening and watching. And Omar, once again, we really appreciate you. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
For everyone, we bid you adieu. Have a fantastic evening. And guess what? I'm Bear Duplessis from Euless, Texas. And we'll see you next time.
See you guys.